Morning, everybody. I'm Hong Shi, and we're going to be spending the next 45 minutes to an hour. And this Dharma talk has an audio-visual component. Like Ajahn Amaro, we call ourselves the monks of the Silicon Forest. So here we are in Redwood City, waiting for the Macintosh to fire up, which I'm convinced it will. Here we go. Can I ask how many of you came to Buddhism from Protestant background? Whether or not you were Protestant, your parents were Protestant. That would include the whole suite of Episcopalian to Baptist. Okay. Okay. Yeah. How many Roman Catholics? Not quite as many, pretty close. How many Jewish? About the same, so 3 for 3. Okay. How many Hindu? Okay, good. Any Muslim? Quakers? Druids? Do we have any other? Who didn't I mention? Yes?
Nothing.
Nothing, yes. That's our secular humanist, atheist, agnostic community, which in the Bay Area there are quite a few. What else? What else did I leave out?
Baha'i.
Okay, thank you. I didn't mention Buddhists, right? How many have Buddhist backgrounds? Anybody? Good? Okay. All right. I grew up Methodist. All right. So here we are. And the reason why I asked that question was because when I talked to Gil Fromsdahl, about what I should be talking about today, Gil said, well, metta is good. And metta is a great, metta bhavana is a great component to vipassana. It's a complement to vipassana. But my tradition, I'm going to be moving around, so I'll block the screen only some of the time, okay, and then I'll sit down. My tradition is from China, the Chinese Mahayana. And so while certainly metta is a big part of what we do, we spend more time with the second one of what's called the four limitless minds, which is karuna. And karuna is great compassion. So I wanted to share with you something that's a very big part of my life and my formation as a monk. Maybe if I stand here, I won't block anybody. How's that? And it's great compassion in the Mahayana. Certainly is the animating heart behind a lot of what Buddhists in Asia by and large practice. So I wanted to talk today about Avalokiteshvara, Guanxuning Pusa. Now, those of you who, when I was growing up as a Methodist in Toledo, Ohio, no Ohioans here? We didn't mess with the Catholics. We were real clear about that. We didn't go into the Catholics' homes because they had too many kids, and besides, you know, you didn't want to take any chances. It was pretty narrow, pretty exclusive, and probably wrong-headed. But later on in life, I went to Catholic services, I'd become a Buddhist before I had my first Catholic mass. But when I saw the way Catholics did religion, the way they did Christianity, I realized that the Chinese Mahayana does Buddhism the very same way compared to Theravada. Theravada becomes, and Zen even more so, becomes very Protestant, and we become very high church. Now, that's the external trappings. What about the heart? Well, of course, there's not that much difference. We spend a great deal of time with our Dharma brothers at Abhayagiri. Ajahn Sumedho, I've known since 1979. So, what is the difference inside? One of the major differences inside with high church, Catholic, i.e. ritualistic, religious Buddhist tradition that is very steeped in mythos. If you understand Karen Armstrong's mythos-logos distinction in as she parses fundamentalism, well, mythos are the folks who keep the stories going, for whom meaning is pretty much the identity. Logos is it's up for grabs. It's evolving as you invent it. It's a different mind. Okay, why did I bring this forward today? Because there's a lot of information. You all are familiar with metta. You use it in your lives, I'm sure. What I hear many of my Zen Vipassana friends say is, you know, all that sitting can tend to get a little dry every now and then. Now, I find Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, to fill the same space in my heart that I see the Blessed Virgin filling for Catholics. Now, so that's enough of an introduction. Let's get on into the pictures, and I want to show you what I have prepared here. Many faces of compassion. This show is too long for the time we have, so I'm going to go quickly. This is my teacher, Master Srimha, my teacher in religion, Srimha Sharma. This show was last shown in Hong Kong, last 2 months ago, so it's all Chinese, and I quickly put the English. There, I got the English good. Srimha is the teacher, passed away 10 years ago, Master Srimha. From the Chan lineage. My tradition is Chan, which is a northern Mahayana. Chan went to Japan and came. Yeah. Right. Korea, it was called Song. Okay, who's this? Anybody been to Barcelona? This is Montserrat. This is the Black Madonna, the original Black Madonna. And if you'll notice, maybe some of you know your Buddhist iconography, she looks a whole lot like Guanyin Bodhisattva, down to the wish-fulfilling pearl in her hand, and the child who has a wish-fulfilling pearl in his hand, and a very compassionate face. Montserrat is this monastery nearly a mile above Barcelona, Catalonia, and that entire monastery is infused with this compassion. Very marvelous. I recognized it right away. I said, oh, I know who that is. Okay, well, here are some of these lovely images. This feeds a Western spiritual nature somehow. Okay, now, today I'd like to just poke around inside that, if it's all right, just to kind of investigate what that might mean in our lives as Buddhists, Buddhist practitioners. This is Guanyin Bodhisattva, Avalokiteshvara. This is a Guanyin stained glass window, believe it or not. If you come to the Berkeley Monastery, see Guanyin. Great compassion. Now, female, i.e. feminine, you could say Sophia in a Western context. Okay? Wisdom. This is a Guanyin Bodhisattva pumpkin. So, Avalokiteshvara is taking root in America, taking seed in America, pumpkin seed. Creative Buddhists over there. This is a Trauma Sutra. In ages past, the Buddha, whose name was Light of Proper Dharma, because of great compassion, and although he as a Buddha had already realized ultimate liberation from suffering, still cared enough for living beings, that he made appear. He manifested a bodhisattva's body, and based on vows to listen to the voices of suffering beings, returned as Guanyin Bodhisattva. So, this is the part of the mythos in the Mahayana. The current Avalokiteshvara, Guanyin Bodhisattva, was a Buddha in a past life who, instead of staying in nirvana with the stillness, said, living beings are suffering, I'm not done. I'm coming back from Florida, I'm coming back to appear again to rescue living beings. So that's how the story, that's the legend, the founding story. Okay, first thing we're going to do is identify Guanyin by name. Okay, Guanyin in Sanskrit is Avalokiteshvara. Okay, Sanskrit name. In Tibetan, Chenrezig. Okay, we're going to go quickly, so if you're taking notes, come back that way. Vietnamese, anybody know? Quan Tien Bo Tat. Vietnamese pronunciation of Chinese. In Cantonese, Guanyin. In Japanese, anybody know? Kanon. In the full is Kanzeon Bosatsu. Hanzen Bosatsu, Kanon. In Korean, I don't know. Any Korean speakers who know Guanyin? Yes, what is Guanxin Bodhisattva in Korean? Once again? Guanseong Bosat. Thank you very much. Beautiful sound. Same sound. In English, how is Guanyin going to make it in English? Probably not. The awakened being who hears the voices of the world. Because there's just too many syllables, right? I suspect Guanyin is probably going to be Guanyin. Or, depending if you come from Cantonese, Guanyin, or Guanteyong, Vietnamese, Guanseong in Korean. Okay, that's the name. Guanyin's names too. Guanyin Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva, you'll define as awakened being. Okay, Guanyin for short. Okay, Guanyin the maiden, she's known in Taiwan, Guanyin Yangyang, that's that name. Guanyin the mother of all Buddhas, plural, left off the S there. Okay, that's another name. Guanyin Fong is the way she appears in a popularized version. Guanyin has been around in China for so long that she's morphed in with the native indigenous faiths. Holy Mother Guanyin, Guanyin Ma is also her name, Guanyin Mom. So Guanyin clearly in the Chinese tradition, Asian tradition, responds to the feminine nurturing. Okay, Guanyin appears as the disciple of Amitabha Buddha in the Pure Land. Thousand, missing a D, translated wrong. Thousand Hand Guanyin, you've seen Guanyin, in fact the backdrop is a thousand hand Guanyin. It's a bodhisattva image with this kind of fan of hands behind. There's stories behind, there's a reason for that. Guanyin who bestows children. Sons of Guanyin. Guanyin is famous for responding to parents who seek children and for some reason or another can't give birth. And Guanyin who contemplates at ease. If you've been to the Nelson Museum in Kansas City, there's this beautiful, huge Guanyin image right at the front door. And that's Guanyin at royal ease. Is that, that's the image. We'll see a picture of that. Guan Shi Yin Pusa Avalokiteshvara. Okay, so those are more names, by golly. Guanyin with the white robe, Guanyin with a fish basket, Guanyin who bestows courage, green Tara, white Tara. Okay, those images in Tibetan and the Mongolian and Nepalese, and the Holy Blessed Virgin, which my Catholic friends tell me is inside, they call it the HBV. She is Guanyin Bodhisattva with the white robe. Interesting. So, these are the outside, this is what the eyes see. What is the mind doing with this capacity? Is this something we're reaching for? And is this going to come to the West in a certain form? Is it already here? Interesting, etc. Guanyin's universality. In 1983, I had a chance to go to Pagan, Burma, sometimes pronounced Pahan. Pagan is a city of 1,300 stupas, 1,300 reliquaries. There's a story, long, long, long story about the rulers of Pagan were very devout, and they emptied their treasury to build as many stupas as they can. A stupa holds relics of the Buddha. And so they built something like 1,400 of them with incredible technology that several Asian university architecture departments are still trying to trace how they got the joints. What kind of mortar did they use? They haven't quite. They tried to rebuild some, and they couldn't. Well, 1,100 of them are still standing. And now this is the heart of Theravada Buddhism, right? It could not be more devoted to the Buddha Shakyamuni and the Four Noble Truths and Vipassana. But we were poking around in Pagan, and right in the center we found one stupa called Ananda Stupa, and who was inside? Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Guanyin Bodhisattva was right there. Okay, I had another friend who went through the great proletariat cultural revolution in Shanghai. He's an artist and a collector of art and a museum curator. And because he was educated in gentry, he was struggled against and imprisoned and beaten, and the whole horror story of what happened during the Cultural Revolution. And he said, if you professed any religious faith at that time, it was your life. You'd be killed for doing that. He said, he said, the only way I got through, well, he has something like 300 Buddha images in his home. They were all trashed. They were all smashed to bits, you know. And so his identity, his life, his heart was all broken at the same time. He said, the only thing that carried me through the great proletariat culture revolution and all that horror was I had a keychain, one of those lucky rabbit's foot keychains with little silver balls, you know, little sticks there. And he says, I recited the name of Guan Yin on my keychain. They thought it was a keychain. It was a recitation beads for me. He said, that carried me through. So he talked about, he said, actually, he had a chance at one point. He was let out. He was repatriated or reinstated. And he found some of the cadres who were running the proletariat cultural revolution in Shanghai. And he got into their homes and he discovered hidden in the backs of closets their own Guan Yin images, where they went for, you know, for this place in our hearts of compassion. Portola Mountain is a place in the South China Sea where Guanyin Bodhisattva is supposed to make her home, Putoshan. So maybe when you travel to China, you'll take a look. Saigon, Vietnam, there's a story coming up later, we'll go by that now, but I want to just remark that. Santa Barbara, California, another story. We'll cut this, if we can go long, we'll add the stories. If we have to move quickly, we'll cut the stories. But Guanyin Bodhisattva appears in many places. These are the Mahayana sutras that teach about Guanyin. Now, Gil would be interested in this. If you're not a Buddhist scholar, maybe this is just something you can find away somewhere. A lot of information, but just take a note. The Lotus Sutra talks about Guanyin in the Universal Door Chapter. The Dharani Sutra tells the whole story of Guanyin in another aspect. The Sharangama Sutra has a section that is devoted to Guanyin Bodhisattva. The Avatamsaka Sutra has the same thing, talks about another aspect of Guanyin. And the Erstor Bodhisattva Sutra, Chittagarbha Bodhisattva, and our familiar Heart Sutra, right? You probably recited a variety of ways. When the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara was coursing the deep wisdom that gone beyond, he looked down from on high and beheld the five heaps, saw that they were all empty, thus crossing over all suffering and difficulty. Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva appears in the Heart Sutra. So once you start looking, Guanyin is all over the place. Guanyin's primary identity in Asia is the ability to respond to those who recite her name. So Guan Shi Yin in Chinese means contemplating the sounds of the world, contemplating the voices or cries of the world. Guanyin, when she came back as Bodhisattva, said, anybody who recites my name can be saved from suffering. And that's where the hands came from, sticking out a hand. I'll lend you a hand. I'll give you a hand. So Guanyin saves from seven troubles. She purges three poisons, fulfills two wishes, bringing children, men or boys or girls. She ends 14 kinds of fears, speaks Dharma in 19 ways, and makes appear 32 transformation lives. This is the whole dogma of Guanyin. This is the whole content of the teaching on Guanyin. Okay, this fellow is my colleague from the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery. This is Doug Powers. He has taught high school. He teaches high school seniors at Berkeley High for 32 years now. So Doug is one of those gifted people who can actually teach advanced teenagers. That's a kind of gift. He's really got that ability. He's 6'2". He used to be Berkeley High School's football team quarterback. So he's got that going for him. Big guy. And very stubborn. He and I got to Gold Mountain Monastery in San Francisco the same year, 1973. And in 1978, we went with Master Shenhua to Asia, on a tour of Asia. We got to Malaysia. We went to Western Malaysia, we were in Terengganu, Dingjalo, if you know where that is. And Doug decided that it was time for him to leave the group because he needed to go climb K2. That was his plan. And so we all were saying, are you sure you're done? Do you have any gear? Yeah, I got some tennis shoes. I'm all set. Doug, think about it again. You know, so he was actually at it. So he goes and asks Mr. Shrimpal, and yeah, it says, do you have to go now? And Doug said, yeah, it's going to snow soon. Sure, go. I checked the weather. It's going to snow in a couple weeks. I want to get there. I also want to be able to climb. This is my chance. If you waited a little longer, do you think it would be the same? No, I think I better go now. If I could guarantee that it wouldn't snow, would you wait a while? No, I don't. I think I really need to go, Sherpa. I'll be back. I'll be fine. I'll call you as soon as I get down from K2. Okay, said the abbot. Okay, so we all went, Doug, you're an idiot. What are you? The abbot's clearly saying, don't go now. What are you doing? Well, you got to get there. He's really stubborn guy. Wants to get to the top of K2. So we finished our pilgrimage, our trip through Asia. We got back and called Doug. We hadn't heard from him. Turns out that Doug is in the Stanford Hospital. And nearly every bone in his body was broken, including most of his face, and he was going through extreme reconstitutive, reconstructive surgery for cosmetic surgery, so it looks like he has a facelift. So as soon as he could come out of the ether, we asked him, what happened? He said, well, you know, I probably shouldn't have gone. Duh, you know. And he said, well, I got there and I started up and I got to base camp and I realized I didn't know the way, and this guy showed up. And he said, I'll take you up to the top. And he said, maybe I shouldn't have gone with him. But that first night, we made the first night up, he says, we were sleeping in a snow cave and I had to go out at midnight to take a leap. And he says, I took about three steps and I might have been pushed or I might have just slipped. But he said, I did three somersaults and in space, and I hit something hard, and it was a rock ledge. And that was the thing that saved my life, but it broke every bone in my body. He said, I was on this rock ledge for 3 days. And he said, I could feel that I was all broken. But somehow, he said, because I had been reciting the name of Guanyin Bodhisattva from the time I took air to the time I started my somersault, I just kept reciting. And he said, well, I was clearly outside my body. My mind was sitting, looking back at me, lying on the snow cliff. And he said, I had this long, long conversation with Guanyin Bodhisattva about starting over, you know, making my life different and kind of being a kinder person and not quite so stubborn. He said, so I just kept reciting. He said, the next thing I knew was this Royal Nepali helicopter, Royal Nepali Air Force helicopter, dropping a ladder down. He said, nobody knew I was up there. I hadn't told anybody I was going up. He said, I don't know who notified him. You know, I don't think Guanyin had cell phones back then. And so he says, the Royal Nepali helicopter took me to Kathmandu, and my parents bought two airplane seats to take me back, and I went in the hospital. That's right. So he says, I'm going to be a kinder person from now on. So that's the kind of stuff, you know, these stories. That happened really close to home. Now, you know, what can you say? I don't know what to say. Okay, these are the practices of great compassion. We know that Buddhism is an orthopraxic, not orthodoxic religion. Right practice counts a lot. And Guanyin's vows say, whoever recites my name will generate this response. Respond to those who call a name. Reciting the names of Guanyin, Namo Guan Shi Yin Pusa, is the traditional Chinese way of doing it. And it's done with music. It's a musical chant, and you recite it. Reciting the Great Compassion Mantra. We have a mantra that is really central to our daily practice, the Great Compassion Mantra. It's called the Maha Karuna Dharani, Abe Jo in Chinese. And people will recite this 108 times a day or longer. It's 84 lines. It takes about 90 seconds to recite. And in the mantra is, say, are the sounds of compassion. And so that's one of the main practices. Bowing the Great Compassion Repentance. There's a liturgy based on Guanyin and this devotion that allows one to reflect on behavior, body, mouth, and mind, and rebuild it. So this is something that that we we do a lot. We have a lot of repentance liturgies. This is actually what I wrote my doctoral dissertation on, was Buddhist repentance. Returning the hearing to listen to the nature, the inherent, the self-nature, the svabhava, the inherent nature. This is a dharma that comes from the Sharangama. It's a chan dharma, a way of turning the hearing itself back so that you listen to the guanyin of your self-nature. That's a big practice. Cultivating 42 hands and eyes is a kind of an esoteric guanyin practice. Reciting the universal door chapter, doing what in the Catholic world is called lectio divina, right? Taking a chunk of text and reciting along, contemplating and then doing it in silence. And then reciting the name and the mantra of Amitabha Buddha, whom Guanyin is connected to. So these are all very familiar practices. These are called Dabeifa, great compassion, Dharma doors in the Mahayana. And people will practice those. Okay, I wanted to show you, demonstrate the method, the fundamental method of Guanyin practice. And we say Namo, can everybody say Namo?
Namo.
In Pali, Namaha. Right, Sanskrit nama. The same. I return to, I rely upon, I take refuge in. Guan, you say Guan. Let's hear Guan.
Guan.
Shi.
Shi.
Yin.
Yin.
Where did Pusa? Pusa. There we go. Say Pusa. That's the Sanskrit, that the Chinese pronunciation of Bodhisattva. The Chinese have a fairly limited syllabary, so you've got to squeeze a lot of Sanskrit into very few Chinese sounds. So, Namo Guan Shi Yin Pusa is the way people recite. Let's try it again. Namo
Guan Shi Yin
Pusa. Great, sounds good. Your Mandarin's getting better and better. Can you imagine? So, we recite it with a tune, and the tune goes like this. Namo Guan Shi Yin Pusa. O Guan Shi Yin Pusa. And it's da 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 di da dum da 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 da. Energetically moving your whole chakra system, karana, so it's designed. People will recite that literally for days and days and days and days and days, months and years. And that there's some sense that that particular melody is a very, very old melody. So let's try it. Let's do it three times. If those of you who are melodious, jump right in. If you're not melodious, jump right in. Use Guanyin Bodhisattva teachings when we teach kids a lot, because I remember childhood as being a time of fear sometimes, right? Everybody's bigger than you are. At night, it gets real dark. Remember Calvin and Hobbes? Remember what lived under the bed in Calvin and Hobbes, right? You talk to them and feed them, you know, and distract them and stuff. And anyway, so we present Guanyin as a friend in need, so that if I knew when I was about this tall and I was, you know, kind of walking down the road in late at night coming home or something, that if I recited Namo Guan Shi Yin Pusa, I had a friend, a big friend. Kids get that pretty quick, as if you know, my childhood was normal and there was a certain amount of anxiety. So we often teach that, and very interesting, we've got a wonderful Buddhist song written by Carole King called You Got a Friend. She didn't know, but I'm claiming it. And We'll get to that in a minute. Okay, now this is another principle. Great compassion. Why I think great compassion, Maha Karuna, is going to be as popular as Metta Bhavana is when it becomes more familiar, is because there's actual principles here. And since we saw our planet floating in space, the photograph taken from the spacecraft, you know, from the space travel, things were different after we realized that we were just this little marble in this black mirror of infinite space. We started to see a system, and now Global Village is just part of our vocabulary, right? So, and global telecommunications also gives us this sense of real relatedness. We see that there's just these systems at work, and we are in them. Okay, we are not apart from them. We are part of them, not separate from them. And Guan Yin has this principle called Tong Ti Da Bei, same body, great compassion. That is to say, Buddhism is often called the religion of analysis. Okay, one of the nicest things about Buddha Dharma is that you don't leave your mind outside the door when you come in to meditate. You have to stay alert, you have to watch. So when you analyze the four elements, earth, water, fire, and air, you get a sense of this shared body, same body. For example, there's Tong Ti Da Bei, earth, right? You've done this analysis here, I'm sure, many times. The bones, the teeth, the nails, the hair, right? The hard, firm parts. When we die, where do they go? Back. They re-embody with the larger body, the planet, okay? So then we have water. Okay, how much? Some people say 80%, some say 75% of the body is liquid. Okay, and it's the composition of it is very much like salt water. Not a whole lot different, you know. The blood, the tears, the sweat, the mucus, you know, etc. Okay, so that water goes back. You know, we can do without food for weeks sometimes, can't do without water for more than a couple days. Okay, so water is a big part. Same in whales, same in birds, same in mosquitoes. Some people say it's the same in Republicans, but I'm not convinced. Never mind, we won't go there today. Okay, the fire part. Okay, 98.6, a little too cold, doesn't work, a little too hot, doesn't work. Gotta keep it constant. Okay, what's the biggest fire source in the universe? Be the sun, probably. When we pass on, that sun goes back. Snakes are cold-blooded, yet still there's this warmth. Okay, we share that. There's warmth in every mammal. We share that. Non-mammals. Okay. So there's also air element, and that's what allows us to communicate, you know, the passages. The fact that by report every element, any scientist in the room will know better than I, but every element is mostly air, mostly space. Protons, neutrons, electrons are this tiny percentage of every element, right? And the rest is the air they move in. So our bodies are mostly this. And the air that we're talking through, listening through, using as we breathe is the same, more or less, I've given a few more hydrocarbons, the air that our ancestors breathed, right? And that our grandchildren will be breathing. So what's the difference? Same body, shared body, great compassion. The difference is what we make with our minds, okay? And often that's a lot of trouble. Okay, when you get back down to this level, you say, I would certainly resent being slaughtered and served as dinner. Right? So do the other creatures that share this planet resent that. So great compassion comes first by analyzing our real state. Okay, not a lot different. Okay, these are two stories. I'll tell these stories. In that Universal Door chapter from the Lotus Sutra, there's a phrase that recurs called Nian Yi Guan Yin Li, recall the strength of Guan Yin Bodhisattva. And essentially, it's a strength of heart. It's a strength of not entering nirvana, but returning to rescue, right? Coming back, because the world is full of the cries, the sounds, the voices of living beings. Happy sounds, sad sounds, desperate sounds, tsunami-based sounds, right? Birthday-based sounds. Sister Mary Pham is a Vietnamese Catholic nun who was in my class at the Graduate Theological Union last semester. She grew up in a house that was devoted to Guanyin Bodhisattva. And interestingly enough, her affinities were with Catholics, but she used the Blessed Virgin, the HBV, to come across into Catholicism. The same heart that worships Guanyin. I teach Buddhist Christian dialogue at the GTU up in Holy Hill. And so Sister Mary, wearing her habit, she still wears her habit, she says, "Oh, Guanyin, my mom was so devoted to Guanyin." She says, and it worked for her. That's what made me a Catholic nun. She said she was about 10, and she had three sisters, and the war was going on. This was 1973 or 4, something like that. And they were in a city, Dalat, that was being invaded by the Viet Cong, and they were merciless. It was a frenzy, it was a fever. They were on the march, they were winning, okay? And so they were very, very ready to wipe out any dissident elements and rape any woman they ran across. And so she said, we were in my uncle's house, and there were soldiers coming down the street. And so my mother lifted the trap door in the floor and pushed us all down, covered the trap door with a rug, and then sat down, crossed her legs, took out her beads, and went, "Namo Bhagavate Bhagavan Bhagavan Jyoku Jyonan." Guanyin has four other words: save us from troubles and difficulties. Namo Bhagavate Bhagavan Jyoku Jyonan. Namo Bhagavate Bhagavan Jyoku Jyonan. She says, I remember sitting down there, cramped in with my sisters, not daring to breathe, and hearing the shots coming, hearing the machine guns, and hearing the voices. They stopped outside the house, so we could hear mom sitting on top of us going, "Namo Bhagavate Bhagavan Jyoku Jyonan. And the voices said, "There's nobody in here. Look down the street." Footsteps went on, gunshots, silence. She heard above, "Namo Bhagavate Bhagavan Jyoku." She said, that voice, there was nobody in the house who said that. That voice came from somewhere else. And she said, they opened the trap door and came out, sobbed. So she says her mother's devotion to Guanyin, she is convinced, was the thing that rescued them. Likewise, Sister Mary's mother, she says, my mother was determined that the family was going to get out of Vietnam safely. And so at that time, if you wanted to leave Vietnam, you had to have something like 5 ounces of gold per person to get on these boats that were built for 200, and there were 600 people crammed on the boats, and the gunwale of the boats was down in the water, so the slightest wave would slosh right over the top. And so she said her mother would sell her mother's jewelry, et cetera, to get 5 ounces of gold to send her first sister, her second sister, her third sister, Sister Mary herself, and two brothers, one by one. And of course, the chances of getting out safely were not very good. It was just too risky. Even if you got across the straits, often they would make land in Malaysia, and the Malaysian army would come down and push the boats back out into the water. You're on your own. Try for Hong Kong. You know, so not always. I don't want to paint the Malaysians as great villains, but you know, the Malaysians had 200,000 people suddenly to take care of. If it was the government of San Mateo County, what would they do? Good question. So anyhow, she says mother would get the gold, she would light incense, she would bow before Guanyin and spend the entire night chanting, and then send her child on the boat. Sister Mary says, so we're all going, what happened? Sister Mary says, 3 years ago we had our family reunion in Santa Barbara. Everyone was there, including mom. Hmm. Wrong. Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so that's the story from a culture where Guanyin has been part of the Buddhist practice for a very long time. Okay, Fran Lawton is a public health nurse who lives in Ukiah. She was in Old Mountain Monastery when I first got there, and she was declared incapable of childbirth. She was infertile. And so she was a Buddhist disciple. She came to Master Hua and said, "Shrifu, I really, really want kids. What should I do?" And so she was like, "Oh, you come and talk." So she and her husband came and they talked. And he said, well, Guan Yin Bodhisattva is very compassionate. If you recite the name of Guan Yin and sincerely promise to be compassionate in your heart and live that way, he said, you can have children. Guan Yin is very compassionate. Fran says, well, I'm a public health nurse, I'm medically infertile. Sarah said, well, nothing to lose. So she said, okay, how about? So she made an image of Guan Yin herself and then got some beads and started to recite and recite. And sure enough, she got pregnant. And she went into the hospital. Of course, all the other, the Americans at Gold Mountain, particularly the women, were just, you know, go, Fran! You know, what's going to happen? She said, well, help me recite. So they go into the delivery room and they discover that she's got a breech birth. Difficult birth. And so she's saying, well, you know, I know my chances. I'm a nurse. Let's do it. So she's wheeled in and there's about seven women, her buddies from Gold Mountain outside in the delivery room reciting Guan Yin's name. And Fran was wheeled out about 2 hours later, and they're all going, what's going on? And they say that this story is still told. They say she had this incredibly beatific look on her face, this kind of incredulity but light-filled. And she said, Guan Yin Bodhisattva stood at the foot of my bed for an hour and stroked my head. She said, I felt this coolness. She said, it's the most exquisite experience I've ever had. You know, and now, that's magic? Okay, well, the women who were there, who, you know, tough-nosed San Francisco State grad students, and, you know, we're all going, Fran was transformed. Well, her son is now 6'4", and he's got a brother who's 6'3", red-haired kids, or, you know, it's like, present that for your witness. Okay. Here's Guan Yin Bodhisattva with 1,000 hands taken from the wall of a library at Dunhuang, the cave temples out in Xinjiang. This was a librarian's wall hanging from the Tang Dynasty. This is the 10th century wall hanging from Dunhuang, China. And how interesting. Back, you know, 1,600 years ago, 10th century, so 1,100 years ago, Guan Yin Bodhisattva was a wall hanging too, just the way a lot of people do it now. See these 1,000 hands that are prepared to offer up and rescue. Okay. Now there's a Guan Yin of your own nature. This I didn't get translated yet. This says, after I rescue beings from suffering, I allow them to bring forth the great Bodhi resolve. The great resolve for Bodhi, Da Hu Ti Xin. This is the Bodhicitta. I teach them to bring forth the Bodhi resolve and never retreat from it. Guan Yin says, any thoughts of fighting inside, I teach living beings to use patience instead to cross over thoughts of fighting. So this is how Guan Yin touches inside, right? The Guan Yin of our own nature. This resolve to attain Buddhahood and rescue living beings is a great Bodhi resolve. Okay, this is Master Xuan Hua. There's a story about the pigeons that we're going to skip today. Great, great story. Okay, now, here's where I have to beg off. There's the Chinese devotional nature is very Roman Catholic. That is to say, the world is very animated. There's saints, there's bodhisattvas, there's dharma protectors, there's gods, dragons, Gandharvas, Asuras, Garudas, Maharagas, there's all these beings that populate this animistic, wonderfully, spiritually charged world that the Chinese Buddhists live in. Sometimes it goes to a level of idolatry, that is to say, that it's in the image that I always want to bring back to my own mind. I want to bring it back and make it work here. But sometimes you wonder. This is a photograph. It's been colored. Originally it was a black and white. Taken reportedly by an F-86 pilot in the U.S. Air Force stationed in Taiwan. And he snapped this picture out his window of Guan Yin standing on a dragon in the middle of a storm. Okay, so everybody goes, uh-huh. You know, very nice. And the picture circulated widely in the Chinese Buddhist world. It was like, this has been tinted, you know, Photoshop or something. So if you need that, there's a religious space in people's hearts that responds to that. The Blessed Virgin is the same kind of thing, I suspect, in some cases. Okay, seeing the Blessed Virgin on a piece of toast, you know, not. How did that $27,000 on eBay, right? Did you clock that one?
Grilled cheese.
Right? With a bite out too, kind of like the Apple logo. You know? So I don't quite go there. But here's a photograph taken last year at Potala Mountain in the South China Sea. Somebody emailed me this. When I look at that, I think, man, clouds don't do that. What in the world could that be? I don't know. Just present it for your own view. Interesting. So, you just wonder. There's a whole lot more that we don't know than we know. And I guess if we let it rest there, we can discover for ourselves. This is the Nelson Gallery's Guanyin. That's at the front door of the Nelson Gallery in Kansas City. That's Guanyin at royal ease. And this image is from when Guanyin was a male. Guanyin changed gender. Guanyin in India was pretty much thought of as a he. The Chinese religious sensibility definitely emphasized the feminine. But I think it doesn't matter. I think it's beyond gender, is my sense of it. This is a Guanyin Bodhisattva image from our monastery in Australia. We got a monastery in Gold Coast. And this is a lovely bronze image standing in a lotus pond. So this is somebody's online Native American Guanyin with a blue dragon. So, interesting, huh? This is an artist. All right, now I want to do something here. I was just in Hong Kong for our community. There was a funeral in the elder nuns passed away. And in Buddhist Asia, Buddhist monks do not play guitars. That's for sure. Just ask Ajahn Mamo, he'll tell you. But I was a folk singer back in my youth. And I watched James Perez pull out a guitar. Jamie teaches at the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery every Thursday night. They've been there for 10 years now. This is Spirit Rock East Bay. So you're Spirit Rock South Bay, right? So anyway, James pulled out a guitar on his 50th birthday. He was celebrated there at the monastery. And by golly, I thought, this is a power tool for us here in the West. And so let's keep that one going. So I recently was in Hong Kong, and I was invited by the culture center of the Taiwanese government. It's as close as they get to an embassy, which they can't have in China, because Hong Kong is now Chinese. But it was a place where you could talk about philosophy and religion. So, but long on the philosophy, short on the religion. So I said, okay, why not really show them what Buddhists are doing with Guanyin Bodhisattva in the West? And so I brought my guitar on. Now, that was kind of risky. Because, you know, there's such a thing as deportment, and if monks are playing guitars, they definitely would have an opinion about that. So I thought, well, let's try it. And the reason is, guitars came to Asia with the Beatles. So guitars equal rock and roll. It's not a native Asian instrument, although it was. It would, I think, is probably the progenitor. Anyway, so, you know, we grew up with guitars as, you know, Stephen Foster, you know, the sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home. It's part of, you know, it's what we do. It's not the guitar, it's what you're singing. You know. So anyway, I thought, let's try. So Jennifer Berezon is a songwriter in Berkeley who is quite a marvelous spokesperson for particularly feminine energies. And she has a song about Guanyin that I think completely nails it. I think she has the heart of compassion in this song. So I'd like to share it with you, and then you can vote, and you can decide whether or not Buddhist monks in America play guitars, and whether this is losing deportment, okay? So.